Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples. So if you guys are anything like me and you struggle with allergies, raise your hand because I am right there with you. I get super itchy throat, itchy ears, and I sneeze like a crazy woman. And it really does prevent me from wanting to take my daily walks with my husband. But luckily for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. It is designed for serious allergy sufferers. Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieves your allergy symptoms and decongests your nose so you can breathe better. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, and an itchy nose and sinus congestion and pressure with an ease, which is exactly what I need. So I have been using them anytime that I have allergies, which has been many, many times. I have found that it has definitely helped me so much where I can go outside again and enjoy my day. So if you guys are ready to live life as if you don't have allergies, it is time to live Claritin Clear. It is fast and powerful relief. It's just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed.
Three girls walked in and they asked essentially, you know, pretty much straight up, hey, do you want to be in the porn industry?
Are you like in danger with like, this is a very, very wealthy industry and you are one of the biggest people in this industry and now you're speaking against it. Like, yeah. Are you safe?
In 2012, I was named Performer of the Year, which means, you know, that industry and the people associated voted that I was, you know, the quote-unquote MVP. And when I won the award, I thought it was going to make me feel like I was somebody. And then instead, it made me feel like I was nobody.
Y'all, this is a heavier episode.
Yeah.
It's real. I mean, this is real. And, yeah. Like, nobody wants
to. They're probably going to demonetize this, too.
All right, happy and healthy listeners. We are so excited about today's guest. I'm back here again with my husband, and we have an amazing guest. We have Josh Broom. Welcome to the podcast.
What's up, Josh?
So glad to be here.
You're a good-looking dude.
Hey,
you know that.
Thank you.
Handsome.
Wow. We need his teeth whitener.
Hype me up.
Do you whiten your teeth?
I do a little bit of peroxide and baking soda once a week.
We need to get on that. They're like white. I drink too much coffee.
They're white. I mean, I drink Diet Coke as well. You know,
you use some type of skincare too?
Oh yeah. Well, philosophy everything.
Can you send that to my husband because I've tried getting him on it. It's
philosophy
just not happening.
Everything for us.
Philosophy.
Like that's the
Josh. I'll be honest with you. I'm a believer that skincare. There's like a conspiracy around like skincare. Right. I don't believe in it.
Okay.
Because once you start using it, you always have to use it.
You can't go back. Well, it's true.
I mean, yeah.
So, Josh, we brought you on the podcast because you have an incredible testimony. And you've had a transformation. You've been on a lot of podcasts. I mean, I think the first time I heard you was on Becoming Something.
Okay.
With JP. We love JP. Big advocates for JP. Yeah. Right? He's the best.
He's okay. Yeah. He's okay.
Yeah. Caleb has beef with him.
Me and JP got beef right now.
No, I'm kidding. They really don't. Don't start rumors, guys. But yeah, we're really excited to hear your story because you were an ex-porn star.
Yeah.
And God radically took a hold of your life. So I would love for you just to share that story to our listeners really fast.
Absolutely. So I think the uniqueness of my story starts with my childhood because I think pornography in itself, it is the byproduct of a wound. And we try to medicate that wound with something. And mm-hmm. that something becomes something that we lean on. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it starts me growing up in a small town without a dad. And that, unfortunately, is a normative thing in Western culture. But what was unique about my upbringing was that my dad that I didn't have in my life was down the street. And I lived in a town small enough where I literally saw my dad. And my mom gets pregnant with me when she's 15, has me at 16. And then he gets married, you know, right after high school. So, like, literally I'm seeing him raise another family and – my family was I've seen poverty, so I don't want to say like we were struggling, but They most certainly had a different and better life than we did. Mm-hmm. And so I saw my dad and his new family and new kids having the life that I didn't have, and they had access to the thing that I wanted and needed. So as I grew up, you know, that was something that caused confusion, and then later it caused frustration, and I thought, well, if I become enough, I'll feel like I'm enough. Mm. And I thought, you know, if I make the best grades, become the best athlete, do the thing, I would, you know, change the way that I saw myself and change the way that I felt about myself.
Wow.
And it didn't work, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, so many people think, you know, if I had the right car, the right job, the right title, the right relationship, the problems in my life will, you know, mysteriously just go away, but often they become worse.
Yeah.
And that's what I found to be true in my life, where go to college, you know, join the frat, do all the stuff, played college basketball for a season, like did all this stuff, dropped out, moved to Hollywood because I started modeling and acting around like 13.
Wow.
And then, so I thought, okay.
Yeah. What was your first break?
So, it was like an Ed Hardy. Ed Hardy back in the day. Yeah. So
what's Ed Hardy?
Ed Hardy, it's like a modern version of like, it's like
rock revival.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, like True Religion vibes.
Sure.
Like
okay.
Something like stuff like that. But yeah, so did like eyewear clothes for them, stuff like that. And then, sure, you know, I did a ton of runway stuff. So like Calvin Klein, like so on and so on. But I was doing that. And then I thought, well, if I drop out of college and move to, you know, in closer proximity to the industry I want to be in, then that would equate to success for me. Mm-hmm. And I got an agent out there and I was doing okay, but you know, it doesn't matter if you make $10 million, if you spend 11, then you know you need more money. So I got a job at a like restaurant / bar to kind of just, you know, make more money so that I can keep doing the things that I was doing. And in that bar, three girls walked in and they asked essentially, you know, pretty much straight up, hey, do you want to be in the porn industry? And I was like, well, never thought about it. Mm. But at the same time, I saw pornography for the first time when I was 13. And average age of exposure, you know, 3 years ago was 11. It's around 8 years old now. And for me, not having a mom and dad in a home or really anyone speaking to my life, I didn't have a representation of what was a healthy dynamic between a husband and a wife, or what is, you know, adoration between, you know, a man and a woman. And that's why like Romans 12:2 is so important. It's like you're either being conformed by the world or you're being transformed by the renewing of your mind. And if you don't know what is God's good, pleasing, and perfect will, the world is going to tell you what you should do. And I believed I could find love if I did the things that I saw. Mm. And so lived a very promiscuous life up to that point. And then, so when someone invited me into that, I thought, okay, this is not that different than how I'm living. How big of a deal could it be? And I do one film and my life just falls apart because I did it. And, you know, this is, you know, 2006 when I did the first film, but like it goes viral. And all of a sudden, you know, if you're familiar with a small town, it only takes one person to know one thing about your life for everyone to know everything about your life. So very quickly, everyone, including my family, finds out. And then the agent that was representing me found out. And she was like, hey, unfortunately, we can't represent you because your name's tied to this. You know, I wish you the best of luck. So all of a sudden, I'm like, okay, what am I to do?
Right.
And the porn agent that brought me into that first scene, he offered me a contract. And then I thought, well,
you dug your grave, you might as well.
Yeah, and it's so easy to believe that, where it's like that's why compromise always leads to deeper compromise, because I thought, well, I did this thing, now I am this thing. You know, that the difference between shame and guilt, where shame is I am my behavior, I am my mistake, in contrast to guilt, it's like I did something bad, I need to do something about it. But I thought, okay, this is just who I am, so now this is what I have to do. But the same mindset as the kid where I like, well, if I do enough and I obtain enough, I feel like I'm enough. And I thought, well, if I become the most successful person in that industry and I make the most money, then that would equate to happiness and satisfaction at the end of the day. And, you know, I think it's a unique way to looking at it. But you know, Romans 2:4 talks about it's God's love, His patience, His kindness that leads us into repentance. And I think, in a real way, God allowed me to experience everything that I thought would satisfy my soul to understand that it didn't.
Wow.
And, you know, so I made millions of dollars, became the most successful person in that industry, won all the awards. And in 2012, I was named Performer of the Year, which means, you know, that industry and the people associated voted that I was, you know, the quote-unquote MVP. And when I won the award, I thought it was going to make me feel like I was somebody. And then instead, it made me feel like I was nobody, and it didn't work. So anxiety was amplified, depression was deepened, and I decided to take my life and made a very clear plan to take my life, walked into a bank, and I wanted justification for what I wanted to do, and I slid a check across the counter, and there was a memo on the check that said what I had done and what I was being compensated for, and I wanted that teller to look at me and say, you know, you are your filth, you are your, you know, you're disgusting, and I wanted her to, like, grimace, shake her head, do something to solidify how I saw myself, and instead, she looked me in the eyes and said, Joshua, are you okay? Like, Joshua, yeah. How can I help you? Because she saw this, like, broken kid. Yeah.
So you walked into an actual bank.
Yeah.
You wrote down something on a check?
Well, so on the memo, just like if, you know, if you were compensated for speaking somewhere, it said, you know, honorarium for X, Y, and Z for tax purposes. But, like, in that industry, they would write something antagonistic to belittle you because the industry is
weird.
The industry is built on manipulation and coercion. If you feel like you're less than, more often than not, you'll equate your worth with selling yourself in that way. And if you believe that that's the only thing that you can say yes to, there's nothing you can say no to, and your no loses its validity, so you just say yes to any and everything.
Wow.
You've already decided you're going to take your life.
Yeah.
You walk into the bank, you're cashing a check.
Yeah.
And that woman looks at you and says,
"Yeah." So to provide some context, so in that industry, you don't go by your real name; you go by a pseudonym, and that in itself should point to the shame that's associated with it. Because when I got into the industry, this agent that was propositioning me to do these films, he was like, "Hey, how did you grow up? Why are you in LA? What do you hope to accomplish?" And I was like, "You know, grew up just me and my mom." So. Red flag or green flag for him comes from a broken home. You're in L.A. trying to be in this creative space like most people. And then I said I wanted to be famous. And I think what's so interesting about that is when you say that you want to obtain something that doesn't have a metric that's real, it's vague. And when you feel like you obtained the thing that you thought would make you feel some sort of way, and there's no way of truly obtaining that, because, like, what is famous? Like, how many followers do you need to feel like you're famous? You know, how many people need to know your name that you're famous? And being rich is the same thing. It's like, if you think, well, if I make X amount of dollars, I'll feel, you know, a certain, you know, way about myself. It just doesn't work. So you just want more and more.
Yeah, there's no end. Literally, yeah. There's zero end ever.
Yeah. So I say that to say, the beauty of accountability is, like, if Caleb said to me, "Hey, man, I heard you talking to your wife in a way that was kind of out of bounds. That doesn't line up with your character. Are you doing all right?" And I could react in two different ways. I could be like, "Man, I haven't got a lot of sleep. We got a newborn. I'm frustrated. And you're right. I should not have spoke to her that way. Thank you so much for telling me that. I need to, you know, figure out how to rest or really, you know, sort some stuff out." Or I could say, "Bro, don't tell me how to talk to her," and I could push you away, and it disconnects the opportunity for you to speak into my life. And what I had done is I had removed any and everyone from my life that is either challenging the things that I was doing or loved me enough to tell me the truth.
Wow.
So I hadn't heard my name in over a year. So this bank teller says, "Joshua, are you okay?" Literally, that's the first time I heard my name in a year.
I have chills.
And it's like, and then, like, when I heard my name, it's almost like I snapped out of this, like, plausible reality that I created based on shame. And I was numb to any and everything. And all of a sudden I felt, man, I'm in this moment. This is real. And, you know, I almost, like, reverted back to being a little kid because I ran home and I cried and I called my mom. Wow. You know?
How old are you at this point?
29.
And how many years were you into the?
A little over 6 years.
A little over 6 years. Yeah. And this is the first time you talked to your mom in a while?
Yeah, about a year.
Wow.
Because she had never stopped pursuing me. She was calling, texting me relentlessly, and I believed the lie. And a lot of people that struggle with their mental health, they go down the same path where they believe that their worth is minimal and there's something wrong with me. And often, especially with like teen and young adults, you see that they believe that their worth doesn't equate with, you know, the metric that they see on social media. So it's like, what do I have to offer? Like, what, you know, capabilities do I have? What kind of gifts and talents do I have? Because other people are doing all this stuff and I can't, you know, meet that bar. I can't do that. I'm not worth much, so I don't feel like I'm much. And then what happens is as the enemy speaks to you, you believe I'm not good enough, which turns into I'm not worth much. So I believe I'm going to disconnect myself from you because I don't have anything to offer you. So even though you're reaching out to me, I'm gonna push you away because I think it's best for you.
Wow.
And I believe that. Well, even though my mom's continuing to reach out to me, I don't have the ability to be a good son. She doesn't really want me in her life, even though she's saying these things. She's saying those things because she has to. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't really mean those things. And if she loves me, it's just because she's my mom. She doesn't love me because of who I am, because I'm not worth anything. So I think it's best for me. I'm doing her a favor if I distance myself from her. So this is where I've like put myself in. And then I hear, hey, are you okay? Joshua, are you okay? And then I run home and call my mom.
Gosh, that's like God calling you by name, like Josh, come home.
And Joshua means Yahweh is salvation.
Wow, that's so cool. With spring cleaning being here, I recently went through my house and got rid of a ton of stuff, like the old bathroom products and clothing that I don't use anymore, and I donated them, and I even went through my kitchen. I had so many old pots and pans that were just not it anymore and had toxins in them. And so Caleb and I have recently been using Caraway, and they are non-toxic cookware. And it's so amazing because not only do they eliminate any toxic materials like PFAs, PTFEs, PFOAs, or any other hard to pronounce chemicals, they also are beautiful and add a really nice aesthetic to your kitchen. I got the gold and white ones, and they just look so good in my kitchen. Also, they have easy cooking features. So they are ceramic, which means they're slick surfaces, means minimal oil or butter, so that anything you're cooking can slide off easy as well as clean easy. And over 65,000 people have rated them 5 stars because they're that amazing. So it is time to try it for yourself. Just as a reminder for you guys, their iconic cookware set comes with the saute pan, fry pan, Dutch oven, and saucepan, plus lids for all of them, and a canvas lid holder and a magnetic pan rack for storage. You guys, it's really, really cool. It's the ultimate kitchen setup and will save you $150 versus buying the items individually. Plus, if you visit carawayhome.com/healthy, you can take an additional 10% off your next purchase. This deal is exclusive for my listeners. So visit carawayhome.com/healthy or use code healthy at checkout. Caraway, non-toxic cookware made modern. And this is something Caleb and I are very big on, is health and making sure that we are not putting extra harmful chemicals in our bodies. So you guys, check it out. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp, and I have a question for you guys today. So tell me, how is your social battery right now? You could be drained or bursting with energy or ready to get out there or just wanting to be with your blanket and Netflix. So I think this can happen because we don't have enough boundaries, or we're just feeling less social with work, or feeling overwhelmed, or we're feeling just tired. And it can be very easy to ignore our social batteries and spread ourselves thin, especially with all the social gatherings coming up in the summertime. So what is the right amount of socializing for you, and how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need more alone time. And therapy can really give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I have done therapy many times in my life. I have never been one to stray away from it and see down upon it. And I really think it is super beneficial. It could be very helpful if you're learning to have positive coping skills or set boundaries, or it just truly can empower you to be the best version of yourself. And so if you guys are thinking about starting therapy, definitely give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. I really think this would be super beneficial for you guys if you're really just trying to learn more about yourself. So Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/happyhealthy today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/happyhealthy. And I really think this is going to bless you guys.
I have a question because you mentioned a lot, like, I was believing a lie. Like, if you could summarize, like, what was that lie that you were believing that led you to make the decisions? Like, it sounds like there's a multitude of things, but, like, you could break that down. What was that lie?
Yeah, I'm not enough. I'm not enough, so I have to do something outside of myself to become something I'm not.
Wow. What would you say, because, I mean, there's so many people in this industry, what would you say the main lie is that these people are believing? Would you say it's that same thing? Is it other lies? Like, what gets someone into this industry?
Yeah, I would say it's a byproduct of an identity crisis because, you know, when you know who you are because of whose you are, it doesn't matter who you are not. Like, when you know who you – like, if you know who you are, it doesn't matter who you are not. And I think if you don't know who you are, often you'll believe, well, I'm not deserving of love. And, you know, that's the beauty of emotions because, like, all emotions are God-given, but the places that emotions take us, if they're not in surrender and submission to the person of Jesus, they lead us to destruction.
Yeah.
That's why your heart and your feelings are fickle. You know, Jeremiah 17 talks about your heart's deceitful and wicked among all things. Who can trust it? And I think if we allow the way that we feel based on what we don't have to lead us to fix our own problems, we're back in the garden creating our own autonomy. It's like, I feel like I know what's best for me and I can fix my life. So I think if your identity is built on, I don't have what I need, so there must be something wrong with me. I'm desiring love, and I'm not good enough, or I'm not lovable, so I'm just going to compromise so that I obtain the feeling of I'm loved. Because if I'm honest, what I was searching for wasn't fame and fortune. It was the feeling of good job, son.
Wow.
Because that's the thing I didn't hear, and that's the thing that I needed to hear most. So if you know, the way a counterfeit works, it makes you feel good for a moment, but it doesn't last.
Yeah. So you call your mom, how many years after do you have this come to Jesus moment where you find freedom from pornography and being
and leave the industry?
Yeah.
So I left the industry that day.
No way.
Let's go.
So I called my mom and she said everything that I didn't think she would. And, you know, if anyone from the South or, you know, can relate with this, where it's like how much trouble you're in is how much of your name is you. So like,
yeah.
She was like, Joshua Luke Broom. You know, she chewed me out because I hadn't called her. But then she said everything that I didn't think she was going to say. I love you. I miss you. Please come home.
Wow.
So I did.
You came home.
Yeah. And wow. Then, but unfortunately I spent about 2 years, I always explain it as, like, I tried to put enough good dirt on my bad dirt so I didn't feel dirty. You know, I tried to become good enough so the perception of others was that, well, maybe he's done bad things, but he's done enough good things to outweigh how they might see me. And I think, you know, to keep it 100, it's like more people than not try to manage the perception of other people without dealing the things that are in their hearts.
Right there.
It's like, I would rather have a stranger's approval than actually deal with something that's in my soul.
So
what would you do? Like, what are those things you were doing for those couple years that...
Yeah, so I just started, I mean, same, like, different industry, same, you know, function, where it's like, I started working in the health and fitness industry. It's like, well, if I get enough accreditations and I'm working at this strength conditioning facility and I get, you know, the person that's mentoring me is the strength conditioning coach for the Carolina Hurricanes and he works, you know, with the Thor program at Fort Bragg and he's pouring into me and it's like, I got the right mentor and, you know, I go to all these classes and get all these credentials and do all this stuff and become like the best trainer and create like this online personal training program and do all this stuff. But it was, you know, I'm in a different industry, but I'm functioning in the same way. I thought if I became good enough and I had enough success and people said, you know, good job, or I got enough pats on the backs, so I would feel as if I was good enough. And at the end of the day, what I brought with me was the mental and emotional trauma from living the life that I lived. And I tried to suppress it. And then my mental health was good for a season, but then it got really bad. And then this girl walks in the gym, and I'm like, you know,
hello,
what's up? you know, it's like, you know, it was, so this is a CrossFit gym. So, you know, the nature is like, we get out our own equipment. We put our own equipment away. This is our house. We take care of our house. And then, you know, I try to throw the little Southern charm on her. I was like, hey, I'll put your equipment away for you. You know, I got mm-hmm. you. And she's like, I'm good. I was like, dang. And then I asked her out on a date, and she's like, no, I think I'm okay. I was like, dang.
Rejection.
I'm in love.
Yes, know? Literally.
Yeah, like instantly, I'm in love with you.
I
you
did that get to him. It's okay.
I was like, man, it didn't deter me. It quickened my pursuit. But eventually, she agreed to go on this run with me. And this was Easter 9 years ago. And we meet to go on this run, and there was just something stirring in me. It's like, I could almost hear my mom's voice saying, like, boy, don't you lie to that girl.
Yeah.
Don't you lie to her. Mm-hmm. Don't you hurt her. Because sometimes lying to someone's face will always hurt, but what will hurt more sometimes is withholding the truth from someone that you need to say. And I was like, man, I'm just going to tell her. And then you know, I made it about me. I was like, well, you know, I'll just tell her that way, like, she's already not going to want to do anything with me when she finds out anyway, so I'll just tell her on the front end and just, like, we'll just squash it. I'll go home, and it'll be great. So I was just, you know, I gave her this, like, five-minute monologue. I was like, hey, this is how bad I am.
Yeah.
And at the end of it, she was like, are you still doing that stuff? And I was like, no, I haven't been doing anything, in, you know, like that, or haven't been involved in that industry for about 2 years. And then she was like, you could tell that she was like really thinking. And then she got real serious. And she was like, well, a person's not defined by the worst thing they've ever done.
Wow.
And a person's not defined by the greatest thing they'll ever do. There's a God that exists outside of time, space, and matter. And he created everything, including me and you. Do you know him? And I was like, maybe.
Wow.
Because I grew up going to church for a season. But I believe that my relationship with God was contingent on my acknowledgement that he existed, and that was pretty much it. And, you know, she was quick to let me know that she was a follower of Jesus Christ. And it was a relationship that she had with Jesus was the foundation in which she lived her life. She's like, I'm not perfect, but my relationship with Jesus is the most important thing about my life. So what kind of food do you like? What kind of goals do you have? I'm like, I don't know. I was like, squat 500 and run a 5 minute mile. Like, I don't know. You know? And but she was just really pressed.
You were just
in.
A bro. You
yeah.
Just,
yeah. I mean, but that's all I knew. And, but she was asking me these deep questions I just didn't have the answer to.
Yeah.
And, she cultivated this curiosity in me. And then she invited me to church the next week and went to church and heard the gospel, and it wrecked me to wow. oblivion, and gave my life to Jesus. And that girl that I went on that walk with, her name's Hope, and that's my wife.
That's who I saw you texting earlier.
Let's go, Hope.
Let's go.
Yeah,
that's amazing. What a story.
Yeah,
I just want to say, so I'm wanting to rewind, because I heard in your story that a lot of the reason why you were making these decisions was because of isolation.
Oh, 100%.
And that's what the enemy does. He yeah. always pushes you into isolation. And the Bible says, like, the man who breaks out of sound judgment is the one that makes, like, poor decisions. Like, it's yeah. in isolation. And so it's crazy how that's a reoccurring theme, that yeah. the enemy will either shame you into isolation. Oh, no one can know what I'm doing. I'm so yeah. embarrassed. Or I don't want anyone's advice. Like, yeah. let me just do what I want to do. And it's crazy when Hope asks you those questions. Yeah. I bet you hadn't been asked those in a long time.
Yeah. I mean, I certainly not. I mean, yeah. and if anyone would have asked me those questions, I probably distanced myself from that relationship. And what you're talking about is so important. So it's like you look at isolation and solitude, and like isolation is I'm hiding from the world, but solitude is I'm preparing for the world. And so isolation is I'm alone, but solitude is I'm alone with God. And mm-hmm. you see Jesus, every time he was about to do something, he was in prayer before and he was in prayer afterwards. And he sought solitude with God, spending time with God, preparing for the mm-hmm. things of God. And it's like, man, isolation, it's born out of shame, where like you see in the garden, it's like Adam and Eve sin, and then they're hiding from God and they're covering up. And I think we spend so much time covering up and hiding that we never step into what God has for us.
Gosh, amen. I actually talk about that in my book, same thing, because it's so, so true. Isolation pulls you away from anything good
yeah.
and godly, and solitude pushes you back to God yeah. and where you get restored and refueled.
Yeah, and it's funny because, like, like isolation is like a byproduct of fear, and solitude is actually a discipline born out of obedience.
So good. I wanted to ask you though really fast, because as we know, like, sin has consequences.
Yeah.
And yes, the Lord can heal anything, redeem anything, restore anything, but there are consequences for our actions. Certainly. And so what was kind of like the hangover for you getting out of that, trying to date again, you know, being in this now godly relationship? Like, what did that process look like of getting rid of the old habits and now trying to date God's way?
Yeah. So for me, like, Jesus saved my life, but the Bible changed my life. And I think I just have a really unique story, because like when I was dating Hope, she was like, I'm in it to win it, but that's not an option. Like, I've got clear boundaries. Like, we're not going into a room that's with a door closed. Like, we're not hanging out solo. Like, we're not doing things. And for me, like, if I'm honest, like, I was super awkward, because all I knew was Netflix and chill. Mm. Like, that's all I knew.
Yeah.
And it's like, man, how do I communicate with someone of the opposite sex in this way? Like, how do I, like, figure this out? And if I'm honest, like, I was pretty awkward, and luckily she showed me a lot of grace, because it wasn't because I didn't want to, because it wasn't an option. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, that's why, like, taking inventory of your life, like, what you allow into your life, who speaks into your life, is so important, because, you know, who you surround yourself is going to be often, you know, indicative of the decisions that you make. So, and just like the person that was discipling me, whereas like I gave my life to Christ, and then 3 days after that, I go to this church and I'm like, hey, I've got this story that I want to tell, but I know that I need to understand the Bible to tell it. And I start, you know, spending time with this guy, Andrew, and he's discipling me. And not only was he teaching me how to read and study the Bible, but every Friday we had these conversations where we would download, and he wouldn't just ask me like, hey, are you doing the right things? What's your thought life like? Mm. Because it's, you know, like, yeah, I know, like, you know, 2 Corinthians 10:5, like, take every thought captive and make it obedient to Christ. But, like, the practicality of that, it's like, I feel a lustful thought, and then I'm angry with myself and frustrated that I'm still having these thoughts. What am I supposed to do? And it's like, I had to, like, take radical steps of obedience to find freedom from the things that I wanted to do. You know, like, you know, we even with a redeemed heart, you know, there's this, like, crazy dichotomy, because like Jeremiah 17 talks about your heart's deceitful and wicked among all things, and Ezekiel talks about like you're going to get this heart of flesh, and the heart of stone is going to be replaced. But then you still got Romans 7 talking about, why do I do the things I don't want to do, and I struggle the things I want to do? And it's because Ephesians 6, there's an enemy that wants to destroy you, and your flesh still has an inclination to do things you ought not do. So I have to say yes to God, no to something else. And then Titus 2 talks about, well, the fruit of saying no to ungodliness is you start to develop an appetite for righteousness, but that takes time. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was like counseling plus discipleship plus someone who was for me, but like defiant against sin.
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, I'm for you, but this relationship is going to look like this. And I think there was one of these memorial stones in my life where we were like, this is like further down the road. So like this was Easter when we had that walk. I proposed in October. So like,
okay, let's go.
Pretty quick. And I remember we were in premarital, like we're doing these like premarital classes like at our church, and we're going through the 5 love languages. And most people have an inclination to love their significant other the way that they receive love. Like, that's our natural response. And her primary love language was quality time. And I was like, okay, great. Quality movie, quality dinner, you know. And she's like, no, the greatest gift that you can give me, the greatest present that you could give me is your presence.
Wow.
And I had a really hard time with that, because I didn't really feel like I was worth anything. So you're telling me that the most, you know, extravagant thing that I can give you is me. The most, you know, meaningful thing that I can give you is myself. I don't really see myself as worth that. And like her love for God shined through her and allowed me to love myself.
Wow.
So yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome! I'm like, you're gonna get me all teary.
You know what I like? You know what I liked about?
I've got two more things that I need to share, but not. But you go.
No, I want to hear those two things. What I liked about what you said, because you answered my question. I was about to ask, what habits did you practice? Because you left the porn industry, you meet Hope. I assume there was still some addiction there.
Oh, sure. Like for me, like I had to go like cold turkey. So yeah. Like no technology in my bedroom or bathroom whatsoever. Like went, I mean, I go 100 on everything. So it's like same. Chicken wing contest. Like you're not beating me. I'm dying.
I'll beat you, bro.
You know what I'm saying?
Like hey, after that, this, we're going to Pluckers.
Just, this is just who I am. It's like, I'm going to die to try to win. But I'm like, okay, I'm going to follow Jesus. Well, watch this. You know?
Yeah.
I'm going to be a disciple.
Like literally like removing doors, like wow. From my bedroom, like no. And it's like, I had to go crazy. So I even like bought like a loofah on a stick and I didn't like touch myself for a year.
Wow.
Let's go.
And but it's like I knew that I had like my flesh was weak.
Yeah.
So I was like, I've got to take drastic measures mm-hmm. because I've lived in a drastic like sin pattern for a long time. So for me to break that pattern, I've got to do something, you know, because like for some people it's like, hey, if you are a, you know, someone who is severely obese and you're diabetic, it's probably not a good idea for you to incorporate like a few Oreos into your diet. Well, like if you've got this equity built up like regarding your health, like maybe you can incorporate like something because you've got some discipline there. But if there's no discipline there, like don't tempt yourself beyond your ability to be obedient.
Yeah.
You know?
It's real. Yeah. Man. So, okay, so this is, I mean, pornography is a part of both of our stories. I was exposed at a very young age as well. Messed me up for a couple years. I mean, same thing with you. And
I was older. I was sheltered.
We were both homeschooled. So, yeah, like, yeah. When I got a hold of it, I mean, it was like, oh, my God, what is this? Like, it was right. My parents never gave me the birds and bees talk. I'm kind of mad about that now because I had to find out the hard way. But we wanted to read some statistics because this is running rampant in our culture. And as you were saying, like, kids are getting exposed to it even earlier on social media, and like you can Google anything and it pops up. So I want to know, what can we do about this? But I want you.
I remember you said you had two thoughts. I want you to hit this. Do you want to hit those two thoughts now, or do you want to hit them later?
Let's talk. Okay.
Read off these statistics. These are pretty staggering. Okay. I'm not gonna lie.
As of 2020, about 71% of American internet users aged 18 to 29 have watched porn at least once. 28.5 billion annual visits were recorded in the popular adult site XYZ. I'm not going to say that.
Yeah, we don't like this site.
The website in 2019, 25% of all search engine requests are pornography related. 25%.
That's crazy.
Worldwide, I'm having trouble with my words today.
Pornography
is a $97 billion industry.
Yeah, and that's just in the U.S. You got... Like pornography as a whole makes more money than the NBA, NFL, Major League Baseball all combined. Ugh. If you're not a sports person, Disney, Netflix makes more money than those two industries combined, short a few billion. 33% worldwide of internet usage, 33% is pornography. Out of the top 10 sites that exist, two of those sites, I'm talking worldwide, of the most searched websites on earth, two of the websites or pornography.
Are you like in danger with like, this is a very, very wealthy industry and you are one of the biggest people in this industry and now you're speaking against it. Like, are you safe? Like, cause
we need security guards.
Is that scary? Cause I'm sure you're an enemy to them now.
Yeah. I mean, I would say like I'm an enemy to them, but I would say they see themselves with a level of superiority because like the amount of monetary gain on a daily basis. I mean, just think about this. Our great state of Texas implements age verification, which I had the joy and honor of speaking at Capitol Hill and advocating for this a few years ago. Yeah, there we go. And so see this come to fruition, and then they sue Pornhub and Pornhub loses. And they don't blink because if they lose $20 million, mm-hmm. that's like me losing 5 cents.
Yeah.
You know, so So I would say, am I safe? I think so. But I mean, if I'm not, that's okay. Yeah.
Okay, what I was going to ask is, I mean, there's some crazy statistics here.
Yeah.
What is the enemy doing with pornography to people? Like, why is this such a thing, and what is it doing to us?
There's just so many terrible things that's attached. Really, like 94% of all pornography has violence in it, so of course it's contributing to that violence being acted out in real life. You know, it contributes to rape culture, it contributes to human trafficking, it contributes to sex trafficking. And I would say, as crazy as the data around sex trafficking, what is even more like gut-wrenching is that you look at, so Heidi Olson is a good friend of mine. She's a critical care nurse in outside of like St. Louis, Missouri. And she is the examiner for kids that get sexually assaulted. And in the United States, around 60% of the kids that are 15 and younger that get sexually assaulted, the perpetrator is on average 11 to 15 years old. So what that means is there's kids in their home watching the most popular niche, which is incest, that are developing these thought patterns and acting out in a real way these desires that are being cultivated. So we don't hear this because they're trying to protect the kid that's doing it because they're traumatized as well. But, I mean, 60% of cases that happen in America, that's the scenario. In Australia, it's around 80%. So in a real way, those kids are watching porn, they're developing these
desires,
and they're acting out on them. And, you know, you look at things like a popular niche is teen porn, but they're dressing, you know, these girls up in stockings and pigtails, and that's not depicting a teen, that's depicting a child. So, I mean, in a real way, yes, they are clearly creating these desires for these terrible things, and it's blatantly obvious if you look on the outside looking in, but when you're in the middle of it, you don't even see that you're being destroyed.
Wow.
Gosh. Y'all, this is a heavier episode.
Yeah. And
it's real. I mean, this is real, and like nobody wants to.
They're probably going to demonetize this too.
Yeah. You know? They can demonetize me all they want. Yeah. We need to get this message out for real. I think another thing that I've seen as being a female is the message that, you know, only guys struggle with this, and this is just a guy's struggle. And now I think it's becoming more open and honest that women struggle with this too.
Yeah.
How have you also seen this damage the women that you worked with, or the, like, have you spoken to any of them? Like, what does that look like now for them?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, what's true about that is, so I've been out of the industry for 11 years, and 33 people that I was in the industry with that are around the same age as me, they're dead. They either committed suicide or died of overdose. 33 people that I know personally, that I've sat with and broke bread with and know real, you know, nuances of their life. That's true for 33 people. 500 people in the last 25 years have died of either murder, suicide, or overdose. And it's because the same reason I stayed in the industry. If you believe that, you know, my life is, you know, it equates to me selling myself in that way, and that's my only value, then you continue to live your life that way. And then all of a sudden, when the phone stops ringing, you think, well, you know, what else can I do? And you've been told by everyone around you, because that industry is built on manipulation, that this is who you are, you'll never be able to do this, and being reminded, hey, the things that you're most ashamed of, they're tangibly found on the internet. Mm-hmm. And they're one click away. So who's going to date you? Who's going to take you seriously? Is anyone going to hire you? Do you have a resume? Of course not. You have to continue to do what you're doing, and you're going to be willing to do whatever I tell you to do. So when they're, you know, manipulated to do like escorting or, you know, this, whatever on the side, they're just going to say yes to it because they feel like they can't say no to anything. And then all of a sudden their phone stops ringing and it's like, well, this is who I am. This is not what I've done. Like, this is who I am. And no one wants me, and I don't have any worth. So what is the point? So either you discover the hope that's found in Christ, or you try to save yourself. And these girls that are taking their life, they leave the industry because they just can't take it anymore. And they're either addicted to drugs because they're trying to medicate the pain, or they try to, you know, live their life. And the world loves to call you by your sin.
Yeah.
So they're trying to do something for themselves, and they believe, you know, they are what they did. And more often than not, the people around them are reminding them of what they did, and they try to do something, and they don't believe they can or they don't know how, and they end up in this hopeless cycle, and that leads to death. And I think that's, like, the beauty of someone discovering hope. And, like, the thing that I was going to say, I was, like, I wanted to go on a tangent on is, like, when people are coming out of OnlyFans and they are on Michael Knowles and the people are like, you know, why are you giving this person a platform? Like, are you serious? The industry that is contributing to 50% of the divorces in America that are leading to kids growing up fatherless, which is contributing to, you know, crime, which is contributing to, like, a multitude of things, like the most profitable organization that manipulates kids and destroys women's lives, like, they're coming out of that saying, I found hope. Like, I want to tell everybody, and you're saying, why would you give that person a platform? Well, I would say there's no one else better to sit in that seat.
Amen.
Because that was me.
Wow.
And my story is different because God kept me in the dark for a while because I didn't do a podcast or stand on a stage for 5 years.
Yeah.
Like, God kept me in the dark. You know, it's like, but I think in a way, like, God allowed me to stay in the dark and to heal and to prepare and, you know, to get a theological education and to do all these things so that I could have a 1 Peter 3:15, so I could give an answer for the hope that I have and share with those people coming out of that industry, because I've talked to that girl and she said the reason that I believed that I could leave is because I saw your story.
Let's go.
And you did, like, I'm doing the very thing that I thought was impossible. And it's like, man, I'm nobody, but I point to a miracle that happened in my life that had nothing to do with me and everything to do with Jesus. So, yes, I will scream that from the rooftops.
That's what it's about. That is what it's about.
It sounds like, to sum it up, you're saying vulnerability equals freedom.
Yeah.
And that is, like, the first step to where, like you asked, like, women who are hiding in sin with this addiction is like, okay, first step to finding freedom and healing is vulnerability.
Oh, 100%.
Just confession.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would say that we're, you know, even in the church. So, I mean, I'm called to the church in that there's, you know, how does the 2.5 billion people reach the 5.5 lost? Well, you share the gospel, but are you going to share the gospel if you are crippled with shame? No.
Yeah.
And like the data says, 18 to 24, 90-ish% of guys see porn on a monthly basis, and 67% of girls see porn on a monthly basis. And if that's true, then you've got a crippled generation needing to do something that needs to be, you know, that's not being done. And it's like that's what I'm most passionate about. And like, to your point, if you mention the thing that's unmentionable to you, what happens is there's freedom on the other side of confession, because there's a lot of people that experience the healing that or the salvation that comes from confession regarding John 1, where you've confessed your sin to God and you've been saved. But have you confessed your sin to someone else out loud? James 5:16, like, have you confessed to a friend so that you could be prayed by a righteous person so there can be healing happen in your life? Amen. Because when you mention the thing that is holding you hostage, all of a sudden that thing doesn't own you anymore. You own it because you have surrendered it into submission to what Jesus has done on the cross.
Y'all, Caleb is in his cooking era. He has been cooking so much for me lately, and specifically, he's been cooking steak from Good Ranchers. And let me tell you, it is so good, y'all. As we speak, he is currently making a nice tenderloin, and I can't wait to eat it after this. Good Ranchers is where I get 100% American meat I can trust that's tender and full of flavor every time. With meat prices continuing to go up and quality at the store going down, Good Ranchers is doing a price lock guarantee currently. This is the only price lock on 100% American meat you can find, and you do not want to miss it. During their April Price Shield campaign, Good Ranchers is locking in your price until 2026 when you subscribe to any one of their full boxes of 100% American meat and seafood that they ship right to your door. Guys, Good Ranchers Price Shield will not only save you hundreds, but it will also help you put 100% American beef, chicken, pork, and wild-caught seafood on your plate that you can trust. I'm telling you guys, we've eaten this multiple times. It tastes so delicious and you can trust it. So also, you can get an extra 10% off your subscription with my code healthy at goodranchers.com today. And what I really love about Good Ranchers is their commitment to transparency, just like this show. They believe that you have the right to know exactly what's in your food. They're amazing supporters of the show. So by supporting them, you can take the mystery out of the meat and also support this podcast. This exclusive price shield offer ends with the month of April, so you do not want to miss it. Secure your best price until 2026 at goodranchers.com and use my code healthy for 10% off your subscription and a price lock guarantee until 2026. Goodranchers.com, American meat delivered.
Listen, guys, Janine and I have been married for 6 months, and the reason why it is a beautiful marriage, it's because of Thrive Market. Thrive Market, thank you so much for sponsoring this episode. We genuinely love you so much. Because of Thrive Market, we're able to save so much time through ordering all our grocery and household essentials through the app or website. Guys, it's just a huge stress relief. And you guys also know I have gut issues, like really, really, really bad. So finding, you know, food with top quality ingredients is super crucial for me. And Thrive Market not only does that, but they restrict over 1,000 harmful ingredients like artificial flavors, high fructose corn syrup, and a lot more. And guys, if you're parents and you need to find organic kid snack, they have low sugar alternatives and high protein essentials. Jenny and I are also training for our marathon, so it is so beneficial that we can find all of our protein options and snacks through Thrive Market. And guys, save time and money and shop Thrive Market today. Go to thrivemarket.com/healthy for 30% off your order, plus a free $60 gift. That's thrivemarket.com/healthy, thrivemarket.com/healthy.
Where's the church gotten it wrong?
If there was something that you needed to know and I didn't tell you, and then you found out from the world and it was wrong, but that's where you heard it first, who are you going to believe when I come to you and say, hey, what you're doing is wrong? Well, everyone around me is doing this. This is normative in the world. Because I just love. It's a children's book, but it's called Good Book, Bad Pictures. Sorry, Good Pictures, Bad Pictures. It's put out by a ministry called Defend Young Minds. And it's geared towards 5 to 7-year-olds. But the overarching theme of the book is there's bad things in this world that you probably will see at some point. And if you see them, that doesn't make you bad. And in the same way, if you are hurt, you run to mom and dad. If you're scared, you run to mom and dad. If you see something that you know you shouldn't have seen, don't be ashamed. Don't keep it to yourself. Don't feel dirty. You're not. Come to mom and dad and let's talk about it and process it. Because where we've got it wrong is by not talking about sex, because sex is beautiful and it's this thing that, you know, God has created to exist between one man and one woman in one marriage for one lifetime. That's beautiful, that creates intimacy, that you know, shapes you as a person and grows you closer to God. And it's this beautiful thing. But if it's, you know, if you see it outside of the context of what it actually is, it's really destructive.
Right.
And if I don't know something to be true and I withhold that from people that I love, I have to answer two questions. If it was so important, why didn't you tell me? And why is what you're telling me different than what I heard first?
Wow. I mean, it's so true. When you're not having these conversations, people are just staying in their shame and their guilt, and they think I'm so alone. And it's the same thing that the enemy does every single time. That was my story. I mean, I literally thought as a 12-year-old, like, I'm the only girl in the world that struggles with it. And to come to find out, the more that I've spoken up about it, I've shared my story, so many women DM me like, oh my gosh, thank you, because finally they feel less alone. And so it's so important for the church to speak about it, for podcast leaders, everyone to speak about it, because then the enemy loses his grip. And the more people that talk about it, the less that he has a hold on everybody. And so
yeah, like to your point, like I love the language that vulnerability is always the bridge to connectivity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, hey, I'm not perfect, you know, and maybe I have struggled, maybe I haven't struggled, but the truth is, it's not a normal thing to struggle with, but it is a normative problem in this world. And if you're struggling with that, you're not alone, because there's billions of people struggling with it. So just know that you're not alone. There's not something wrong with you. But there is something wrong with that, and it is contributing to you seeing yourself in a wrong way, and it is a detriment to your life. You know, so I get the opportunity to do chapel for a few NFL teams and speak in different like secular places, and I always ask people, I'm like, hey, do you want all that you could be? You know, do you want more capacity? Do you want to become more? Do you want to do more? Do you want to be more effective in whatever facet or sphere that you have influence in? Well, porn is minimizing your worth. It's wasting your time. There's neuroscience around it. It creates, disconnection from your ability to have a long-term memory. It creates, these feelings, the dopamine hit in a way. It damages your synapse. So you end up being lethargic. You lack integrity. You all these things. Wow. It's like you're making yourself ineffective. Yeah. So if you want to be the best version of yourself, you are putting something damaging in your heart and mind, and it's having a real impact on your life. So if you want more, you need to say no to that.
Man.
Okay. Well,
I've got to ask him that one question.
Which one?
The one about all the girls
want to know. I have so many questions.
All the girls want to know.
Wait, can I ask one more before that? Yeah. Okay. So before we move on to that, I guess what would you say to the person right now that is stuck in that sin? They feel hopeless, like, I can't get out, I'm struggling with the shame. What would you say to that person?
Yeah, I would say, hey, well, number one, if you are a follower of Jesus Christ, Romans 8:1 says, therefore there is no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus, and shame is not the voice of God saying there's something wrong with you. That's the voice of Satan saying there's something wrong with you, and I want to keep you trapped and stuck where you are, and that's what shame does. Like, shame isolates you, so you believe that you are what you did so that you stay the way that you are. But I would say, hey, you're not alone, and there is freedom on the other side of telling someone. And the data says someone in your circle that you trust has struggled with or is struggling with something that you're struggling with too. Tell someone, and now if there's something that's leading me to trip over something, I need to remove the thing I'm tripping over. So before I can be obedient, I need to be self-aware. What's leading me to do the thing that I want to now remove from my life? I need to take inventory of my life. What am I listening to? What am I watching? Who is speaking into my life? And now I need to protect myself from myself. You know, I tell people, you need to check yourself or you wreck yourself. You know, I have a proclivity to do things I ought not do, so I need to protect myself. What kind of boundaries am I putting place in my life, and who is holding me accountable to me saying, am I doing the things that I'm saying I want to do?
That's so good. And I also think, too, checking, sometimes I think there's an emotion behind it. You know, people are either bored or lonely or like wanting to feel some sort of feeling, and we're chasing a feeling by doing that. And so taking note of that as well.
Yeah, 100%. Because porn is not the problem. Like, porn is, I've medicated a wound or a lack in my life, and that medicine has become something that I lean on, and the root is actually, there's something that happened to me, there's something that I did, there's something I didn't have, and I felt some sort of way, and I didn't want to deal with that emotion, so I've suppressed it by consuming that content, because maybe I was rejected, and I believe that porn will never reject me, or I was wanting to be loved, and maybe this made me feel like I was obtaining love, or whatever it might be. It's always a medication for a wound that has nothing to do with that. And yes, there's this habitual nature of that, but the root problem is where, we need to address. And I think that's why it's so complicated as a church, because there's no system, because it's an individualistic problem. Like, what happened to you? What conversation do you need to have? And it's like, it's so complicated.
Wow.
So good.
So I get a lot of questions about this, because being the man, but a lot of women ask me, should I date a man, or if I catch my man watching pornography, or if he confesses to it, what should they do? Like, should they stay in the relationship? Should they break up? Should they wait till he has feeling or he's found freedom in that? Yeah. What would you say to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is no like standard answer, because like the relationship's going to have like different complexities. But I would say there's a significant difference from saying I'm sorry than repentance.
Yeah.
Because repentance is, I'm turning my back to it because I know it's not good for me, and I'm moving away from it. Saying I'm sorry is, hey, I got caught, so I feel bad about it, mm-hmm. Which is, you know, yeah, completely different. So I would just say, if you're with someone that has an active addiction, active addiction, and they're struggling with that, and they confess to that, the best thing that you could do is not lead them into temptation. So I think, just as like with every relationship, like restoration of a relationship might not always meet your expectations. So I think like doing the thing that you know you should do, it might cost you something that you don't want to give up, but the best thing that you can do for them is like, hey, maybe we need to take a break. Maybe this is just not a healthy season for you. You know, if it's like, okay, this is, you're talking marriage, engagement, something like that, there needs to be something, you know, someone brought into it, because I just don't think like there can be like a standardized answer.
Yeah.
But I would say what the truth would be, like, are they committed, uh-huh, to seeking freedom from it, yeah, in a way where they're willing to give up something that they're doing in their life, and are they willing to give access, yeah, to like certain areas of their life?
I know so many women who are with men who are unrepentant about it. And I have buddies.
They don't see the big deal about it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and I have buddies who I've known who've watched it, and their girlfriend didn't know, and then they get married, and then they're going through it in marriage.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's the number one lie. I mean, you know, the number one lie that people believe, like, that are dating or pursuing marriage, if they're struggling with pornography, they truly believe, well, if I were married and we were having sex, I wouldn't have this proclivity to watch pornography, but it's just not, wow, true. Yeah. Because you've got an appetite for something that's fictitious. You're not desiring
fictitious.
Real...
Fictitious. Can you... Fictitious. What does that mean?
Well, fictional. I mean, because like...
Oh, fictitious.
Because pornography is a depiction of something that is real, but it's not. And okay, there's this guy, his name's Dr. Tinbergen, and he won this Nobel Prize around this research called supernormal stimulus, and he studied these butterflies. He created a female butterfly that was bigger, better, more vibrant, but it was fake, and then the male tried to mate with this fictitious butterfly, and then he started fighting with the other males, and all of a sudden they started dying out because he developed a desire for something that wasn't real, and he stopped desiring his spouse. And in a real way, like, you're looking at, you know, there's 18, 19, 20-year-olds that I talk to often that are struggling with ED. It's because they've got an appetite for something that they can't find because it's not real.
Gosh.
If I can speak to men, or if you're watching this, like, I gave up pornography years before I met Janine, and it will bless your marriage. If you're a woman who's struggling with it, if you can find freedom, thankfully... Yeah. It, and you found freedom before we got married,
oh, yeah,
and I don't struggle with that. And not saying that I'm better than, but it really will change, I think, your marriage and the sexual temptation.
100%.
Yeah, because the most beautiful part about marriage is connectivity, uh-huh, and pornography creates disconnectivity.
Well, there's like a third party in the relationship.
Yeah, but well, I mean, but like in, you know, I apologize for being crass, but like, yeah, in a real way, like, by training yourself to have a relationship with your hand in a screen, you're actually training yourself to be a poor spouse. You're, yeah, training yourself to finish quickly. You're training yourself to be selfish. You're training yourself to hide. You're training yourself to cover up. Like, you're training yourself to be a terrible husband or a terrible wife.
Yeah.
That's this is so real, y'all. This is real. I know this is like probably more than people are used to hearing, but I mean, y'all, this is just the truth. And I wanted to go back really fast. I think we were running out of time, but you mentioned that it leads also to human trafficking. This supports, yeah, human trafficking. Can you explain that a little bit more?
Yeah, I mean, you look at pornography, the way it's attached to human trafficking. So number one, pornography is used to market in trafficking, where, like, in today's terms, digitally, there would be manipulation of, like, getting someone to send imagery to a trafficker, and then that trafficker blackmails that person with that. And in a third world country, there's Polaroid pictures of a 12-year-old in, you know, a third world country, and it's out on display as you're walking through a town. It's on, you know, a glass door saying you can do this to this person, and they normalize. And then another way it's used is by doing that. it becomes normalized to the person that it's being done to. So you associate, well, my worth is attached to this, and I did this, and there's evidence of what I did. So it allows me to being used to being objectified, and then there's this whole idea around, well, there's this ethical pornography, or the actors or actresses, they want to do that. No one in that industry wants to do that. Maybe they said yes to it the first time with, you know, some sense of volition, but you continue to say yes to it because you believe that you can't say no to it because you can't say yes to anything else. And then you look at the way that, you know, just traffickers are grooming, you know, those people. It's like, man, that's the way that you're literally training a human to be a slave.
Oh, it's so sad. Yeah. It genuinely is so heartbreaking for me. I have such a passion for trafficking, and that's just so heartbreaking.
So being the person who stops today, you are, quote unquote, you are helping.
Movement. Without the ability to market the people you're selling, then there is no market.
Like, yeah, it's true. The supply and demand.
Supply and demand. Like the look at this. Literally, the monetization strategy that exists on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook, everything else, it came from the pornography industry, and they were doing that 10 years before, you know, that existed. Before, like, creatives were monetizing their content, pornography was doing that long before that. Mm. And, yeah, I mean, your eyes, like, you are the product. Like, your eyes, in a, like, there's no one paying marketing dollars for a product that's not being watched. The fact that your eyes are on the product is a reason that they're able to create it, because there's an audience.
Gosh.
So we have a few minutes left. The floor is yours.
Well, I actually want to ask him a question. Okay, well, first of all, thank you for sharing all this. I feel like I'm learning stuff. I feel like the audience is learning. We are out of time, but obviously we want to make sure we touch upon your book.
Yeah.
Because you just released a book, and please talk about that, and I want to make sure that we link it down below for listeners as well.
Yeah, so the book's called 7 Lies That'll Ruin Your Life, and it's, you know, just around, hey, if you believe a lie to be true, you will live as if that lie is true, and that causes destruction, but there's good news that Jesus came into this world embodying truth, and if you allow that truth to, you know, come into your heart and take over your life, what happens is truth dismantles lies. And if you apply that truth to your life will change. And I would just say, like, the synopsis of the book, it's just, it's tied up in when I heard the gospel. It's like where, like, your testimony is not the gospel unless the gospel's in your testimony. And for me, I heard this, you know, this passage out of 2 Samuel chapter 9, and, you know, you've got this interaction between David, Ziba, and Mephibosheth, and David has made this covenantal promise to his friend Jonathan, and he's going to show the loving kindness of God to Jonathan and his family forever. And then, you know, Saul, he sins against God, his kingdom stripped away from him, and then, you know, there's this dynastic change where normally, you know, the next in kin would become king. So it was Saul, Jonathan, then Mephibosheth, but David was chosen and anointed to be king. And now David is at the, you know, the pinnacle of his kingdom, saying, okay, here I am. How can I show the loving kindness of God to someone? And he asks, is there anyone left out of Saul's family? Finds Mephibosheth, brings him into his home. And Mephibosheth, he was hiding in this place called Lodabar, which means place of no pasture. He was expecting death, because historically that's what it meant. And then David brings him into his kingdom and says, hey, I'm going to restore your grandfather's land. I'm going to invite you into my kingdom, and I'm going to, you know, you're going to be with me forever. I'm adopting you into my family, and I'm giving you a piece of literally the promised land. Mm. And his response is, don't you know who I am? He calls himself a dead dog. So 2 Samuel chapter 9, verse 8 says, who am I? I'm a dead dog. In this culture, like, dogs were hated, and they saw a dead dog. They were like, yes, a nuisance. Yeah. So in a real way, he's saying, don't you know who I am? Mm. And then after that, I'm thinking, like, okay, I believe that the gospel is true. I'm hearing Romans 3:23 that we've all sinned and fall short of the glory of God, and Romans 6:23 saying the wages of sin is death. We're all guilty. We're all deserving of death. Mephibosheth is saying, hey, I'm guilty. I'm deserving of death. And then we see this beautiful picture of grace. Mm-hmm. And he didn't think he deserves it, and neither did I. And then I heard Hebrews 12:2 talking about it was with joy set before him that he endured the cross. So Jesus not only was perfect in every way in his obedience, but he went to the cross with love in his heart for me and for you.
Amen.
Let's go.
And if you understand that there's a God that loves you that much, you know, Romans 5:8, you know, it was while you were enemies of God, while he knew the worst about you, the thing that you believe that disqualifies yourself from God, he already knows, and he went to the cross and he died for you anyway. Mm-hmm. If you know that, that changes your life. That's why, you know, it's if you know whose you are, it doesn't matter who you're not.
Amen. That's so good.
Dude, thank you for
coming on. That was doing this. Such a blessing. Y'all, we'll have the book linked down below. We back you up so much. We love what you're doing. Thank you for speaking up and speaking out. And I know that could be scary. I'm sure you get some hate from people. But yeah, we talk about that off camera. But you guys, check him out. Go follow him. Go get his book. This was such a blessing. Thank you so much for coming on Happy and Healthy. And this really just, man, that was awesome. That was really awesome. All right, you guys. We will see you guys again next week for another episode of Happy and Healthy. But until then, stay happy and healthy. See you guys. Bye.
Well, good day to you. It's Joel with The King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.